You're listening to Wheelationships.
Okay, we got most of the way through the law of exposure last week. You've got your handouts there on the table. You'll see what we did fill in from last week, and then we're going to pick up and go from there. But a real quick review, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. But law number 10 was the law of exposure, which said that senses need to be visible to others and communicated to them in relationships. And as we said, if you have a fence or a boundary line that you've put there, if you haven't communicated it, then it's not working. It's like it's not even there at all. So you need to be able to communicate those things to the people that you're in relationships with so they know what's expected. But all too often, they're invisible. We keep them a secret. And most of the time that we don't communicate them, as we've said, is because it's out of fear. It's a difficult thing to do. We're afraid what they might think. We're afraid how they might respond. We're afraid of not being liked. We're afraid of somebody getting angry. We might feel guilty. And also, sometimes we're afraid of what their perception might be of us if we have to say no or if we have to set a limit that might be uncomfortable. We are afraid of all of those things. So externally you do nothing. Internally you do, though, and that's where the problem is internally you've got those limits that nobody else is aware of. Somebody's crossed that line. It's made a negative response, and they don't know what or why that has caused that to happen in that relationship. So instead of communicating an honest no, we withdraw. We become defiant or passively withdraw quietly. We secretly resent that they've hurt us or they've gotten us angry, but we haven't communicated why they have or what they have done. We do all this different types of manipulation, indirect communication, all hoping to gain this desired effect that we want in the relationship, but we've never done the really tough step, which was communicate that. So, you know, we try to manipulate and do those things to make it happen. I gave some examples of husband and wife, a parent and child, and co-workers, where in each one of those cases, the communication wasn't done. It was silent, and yet relationships suffered because of those unexpressed fences that they had in their lives. So we try those different things, and they don't work. When we don't communicate the negative, the positive, then they're just going to hurt the relationship instead of helping them. And then we showed a clip from Dr. Henry Cloud, Don't Manage Other People's Perceptions, which was very interesting because there's a lot of ways that we don't communicate honestly, but we don't call it lying. You know, we're again, as he was communicating last week, we're hoping to manage their perception of us, how they're going to respond to us, what they will think about us. And so we word things in a way to protect ourselves. It's basically what we're doing, the defense mechanism. So we try to find easy way out because communication is not always easy. That's why there's so many books out there on communication. It's a tough thing to navigate in many ways. So we hope they get the message by how we're acting, but we're keeping things a secret, and it's in that light that we have access to God and to others, and we need to be able to expose those things. And that's what the law exposure says, that a life lived in the light is going to be a much more better one. It's going to be healthy, and that's how we should be living. But I also reiterated that doesn't mean we bring up every little negative, every little offense, every little slight that's been done against you. Most of the time, you just need to grow thicker skin, and you need to not be so easily offended and not allow your feelings to navigate your emotions, and that's what we do a lot of times. And some personalities are more prone to do that. We've talked about personalities in here. The sanguine type personality very much goes on their feelings, and how they feel is how they act, and most of the time it leads them headlong into trouble. So you have to be careful about those things. So then we went into some rules. How do we navigate with this law of exposure? There's some rules that we need to apply to make this whole thing work. And the first rule was live the law of exposure yourself. We talked about how, especially as parents and in the family unit, that's where this is going to be the most effective. They are going to follow your example. They're going to learn how to communicate either good or bad by what they see mom and dad doing in the home. But it's a constant thing throughout your life. You need to be living this law of exposure as an example to others. We use the example of a 12-year-old boy that was frantically rushing around cleaning and doing all these things around the house because he could tell mom was upset, but he really just didn't know why. And it was a whole thing where mom had a habit of getting angry, but nobody knew why she was angry. So the rest of the family was always trying to navigate around her moods, hoping to shift and change that mood, where communication clearly verbalized would have solved so many things. But instead, he was picking up some bad communication habits that many times our kids do that they're going to take into further relationships when they get older that's going to be a problem. So, any comments up to this point? I know I'm kind of rushing through. I'm intentionally not rehashing all of last week, but just want to make sure we kind of hit some highlights to remind you of where we have been. So then rule number two was make the fence clear. It's really hard for people to play by the rules if they don't know what the rules are. We talked about the example that Tim and I stayed at a home of a young parents trying to put their three-year-old down, and how, if you remember that story, it didn't work because the communication was never clear, the consequences were never consistent. The same offense would get praise one time and it would get punishment another time. And that's a kind of a simple illustration, but a lot of times we do that with our teens, with other people, in our relationships, our coworkers, or what have you. The offense is the same, but our boundaries are not the same. They're not consistent. It's okay here, it's not okay here. And we need to make sure that our fences are very clear and that we're consistent with them so that these relationships stay healthy. And then we talked about unclear fences being inconsistent. Behavior doesn't change. And if we don't stick to it, don't be surprised when things go awry. Then we jumped into the last rule, and that was kind of where we ended last week, which was rule number three, cure fears and make communication safe. A lot of times we don't have the communication we should, again, because of fear. And many times our responses either perpetuate that fear or it's going to cure that fear. How safe somebody is going to feel coming to us and exposing their feelings, because that's a real vulnerable position to be in. And we can either cause them to feel safe to communicate to us or cause the fear to exaggerate. So they need to know they have to be able to come to you and to be able to communicate. And I think we had a chart. Does he have that on there? Yeah, we talked about, we showed this chart where if someone gets angry, there's ways that we reinforce the fear and ways that we cure the fear in the different types of situations. So that's kind of where we left off. You can kind of skim through that chart. I'm not going to go over. We may get through early because I'm kind of whittling and realize I'm doing that. But they get upset with something you've done. You can reinforce the fear by how you respond and how you react to those things. Whether you're going to act injured, withdraw, be sulky, or be whiny, all those kind of different things will reinforce as opposed to applying empathy and giving a listening ear, admitting when you've done wrong. So here's the goal. That's kind of where we left off. Any comments on that chart?
What exactly does it mean by don't be a buffer? Or, I mean, the enabler would be like the napkin thing, I guess, but a buffer being what?
That's kind of like that triangulation thing we talked about where you might have an offense with me, but instead of coming to me, you've gone to Jen. Jen now becomes that buffer where you really should have come directly to me.
Okay.
You go to that third party.
Okay.
Yeah, you go to the third party to try to resolve something instead of going to the one that you absolutely should be doing. And a lot of times we do that enabling thing where we hinder people from working out their conflicts. We're going to get into that in just a minute, especially with our kids.
Mary, do you have more copies of that from last week as we were gone?
I mean, after the last week. Oh, you know what? No, we didn't put it on the handout. But it is online. You can print it out. At least I think it is. If it's on these screens, it should be online. Would you write me a note?
Yeah.
And if not, if you can't get it there, then I'll get you a copy because I can print that off easy enough. But, and that wasn't all the reinforcements and all the cures, but that was just some highlights to help you remember when you're faced with those situations, you have a lot of power on how they're going to feel the next time they need to talk to you, whether they're going to feel safe or whether they're going to feel threatened and whether that's something that they're going to be able to proceed in to do. Anybody else? All right, so here's the goal. We've gone through these first three rules here, and here's the goal, and here's why this is so important. Regardless of the conflict that we have with somebody, we should be wanting to reinforce this idea and this mentality is that our relationship is bigger than this conflict, this feeling, or experience. Our connection and affection will remain after this conflict is passed. Unfortunately, that does not always happen, but that should be our goal. We should be able to have a conflict and still walk away knowing that that person or this relationship is more important than however that conflict made me feel or what my reactions or responses were. Christ tells us over and over, we're to live at peace. We're to be in unity with one another. You know, the relationship may not always be as close as it was, but it should be a relationship of peace and a relationship of unity. So that should be our goal in these relationships. So rule number four, don't reinforce non-expression. Now what that means is when met with a limit, some people withdraw or they become defiant for a variety of reasons. Again, by golly, guess what? Most of the time it's rooted in fear. Again, fear of rejection. They withdraw because they fear they're not going to get their way. That's a way of them to manipulate, to try to get their way. Fear of being hurt further. Fear of what someone might think of me. So they withdraw or they become defiant. And when you're met with that type of response, it's important that you remain loving. That empathy we keep talking about, empathy is so important. Remain loving, but at the same time, don't give in to their behavior of non-expression. You want them to know that you care about their feelings, but you also need to communicate. You don't approve of how they're handling that. Now, by non-expression, this silent stuff we're talking about, I'm not talking about a short period of time. I'm a type of person when I'm either angry or upset, I need to retreat a little bit to process. I'm not a real quick thinker when I've got all these emotions zipping and zapping. What I'm talking about is what's not healthy is a day, 2 days, 3 days later, you're still getting the cold shoulder or you're still getting the silent treatment. That's the type of non-expression that should not be reinforced and put the stamp of approval on. They need to be able to verbalize that, and that type of non-expression shouldn't be reinforced and approved of. But short periods, that's okay. Sometimes we need to be able to prize. It's good to be silent before you speak. So don't reinforce non-expression. And then rule number five, don't get in the middle. Kind of like what I was talking about with Jody, it's back to that triangulation. Don't allow yourself to be put in the middle in order to enable someone from having to deal directly with the person they have a conflict with. Kids are many times going to try to do this, especially with mom and dad. I don't like something dad has said or done, so I'm going to go to mom and complain about it. Don't get yourself in that position. I've had to say on more than one occasion, you don't like what daddy did, go talk to daddy about it. And I'm not talking about areas of discipline where mom and dad are a united front. You know, dad said something flippant, daughter got her feelings hurt, daughter comes whining to mom about it. No, you need to go to dad and take that up with dad, those kind of things. Don't get caught in the middle. And most of the times what they're doing, especially if there's a conflict involved, it's their way of sucking you into the middle of the conflict so that you will do their negotiating and conflict resolutions for them. And you need to not get in that position, whether it's between two siblings or kids in general. Parents are really, really bad about inserting themselves into the middle of kid conflict. Siblings, friends, whoever they are, they need to learn how to negotiate those waters by themselves, and they're not going to do it if you step in and resolve everything for them. Keep an ear handy, if it's siblings, you don't want any, if there's blood, you need to step in before that. But most of the time, you need to let them resolve them for themselves so that they can learn that valuable skill. Yes, you can counsel, you can give some wise direction, and it's really hard. I know it's hard as a parent. I've had to experience it on more than one occasion where we've had to stand back and watch from afar our kids in conflict with either other kids or siblings or what have you. But boy, I'm always so thankful when we stood back and let them figure out those tough waters by themselves, because if they don't, most of the time they're going to grow up to be an adult who only learns two things when met with a conflict. I either attack or I retreat, because they didn't learn how to negotiate a conflict with somebody else. So you need to let them do that. What I call that mama drama. Stay out, mama. Mamas, I think, are worse than daddies sometimes. They want to get in and fix it because they're so in tune to all the emotional. They want to get in there and make things all right. I laughed this last week. A girlfriend of mine from high school, Facebook. I tell you, you learn more things about people on Facebook, good and bad. But she was uptight. Her little daughter's boyfriend was, acting up. And so mama was on Facebook, fussing about it, getting all these other mamas riled up, and some poor little 13-year-old boy somewhere is going to have a mob of mamas after him because of mama getting involved and stirring up the drama. No. If there's not a safety issue, back off, let them learn how to work it out for themselves. They need to learn that, so it's really important. Not always easy, but very important. Okay, any comments? Okay, rule number 6, learn sense vocabulary. This sounds so simple, but it can often be a really hard thing to do. Sense vocabulary, one of the first words that you need to learn and your kids need to be comfortable saying is no. And again, some personalities, especially those people pleasers, that's a really hard word to get out there and then stick with it and mean it when you say it. Dr. Cloud gives an illustration of his daughter. He didn't use it on this point, but I thought it was a cute story, how just learning no is not enough. You need to learn how to use these sense vocabulary words appropriately. And he shared a little story as he was teaching his little 3-year-old daughter some boundaries in the kitchen. There was a cabinet that had all kinds of Tupperware and stuff. They didn't care if she got in there. She'd get in there and play. But there was a drawer next to it that had clean, folded dish towels, and they didn't want her playing in that one. And the reason was she'd get open the drawer, and she'd go, fling, 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 throw those dish towels behind her. So there was, this is a yes, but this was a very clear no, and they were teaching her that no boundary on that particular drawer. And he kind of went around the corner, was watching her to see how she was going to do with this, and she went over to that forbidden drawer, opened it up, and went, no, 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 no. So it's not just important to learn no, you got to apply it in the right way and apply it appropriately. So she had half of it down, but kids need to be equipped with vocabulary that they are comfortable using when they need to have a boundary or a fence applied, and we need to be able to teach them, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. No, I'm not going there. No, God would not be pleased if I did that. And it's perfectly fine to say, no, my parents don't allow that. I've many times let my kids use me as the bad guy. I'm fine with that. I'm not ashamed of the standards that our family has. Everybody's not going to agree with it, and that's okay. I'm not going to force my standard on you, but I'm perfectly comfortable with my kids saying, no, my mom and dad would not allow that. But even as adults, we struggle, and I know I'm one of them that struggles being able to say no, be comfortable with that, and not walk away second-guessing yourself or feeling guilty about it. So you need some vocabulary. No, I'm not available at that time, but thank you for asking. No, I'm not comfortable with this conversation. We need to either change the subject or I'll have to leave. No, that behavior is not acceptable in our home. No, you need to make that decision yourself. So all of these things. I used this past week. My husband was getting on me because I found myself in the same trap. Don't think we have this down pat just because we're teaching it, because we don't. But we had a request made of us that needed to be said no. We didn't have, it just was not going to work in the schedule. And we said no, but I was going, oh, because I felt so bad, And the no was accepted, but then I kind of found myself back coming in the back door renegotiating that maybe we should. And Tim's going, fences. Okay, right. I need to do that because I do feel bad. My personality very much cares what people think. And it's difficult for me to stand firm sometimes. Not all the time, but you know what I'm saying. I want people to be happy, and that's not my job. So I struggle with that, but it's been good to learn that it's okay to say no, be comfortable with that, know that I've done the right thing, and not try to renegotiate. So all these fences, these laws, these rules, they're there to help us, to keep us safe, keep our relationships healthy. And Jesus had two really strong boundaries: love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And from those, we establish our fences and our boundary lines so that our lives can be healthy, but they do need to be visible. They need to be clearly communicated. So that's the boundary, laws, rules part of things. So we're going to move into our little part for today, and that's talking about some myths. Now that we've taken a look at fences, the laws and rules that govern the fences, we need to examine some myths that you may or may not have when implementing each one of these different laws and fences in your life. Now, I've got a couple of general statements here. I want you to see whether you think they're truth or myth. I found this kind of interesting. Some of them made me chuckle. This one I had never heard of. Chewing gum takes 7 years to pass through your system. Did anybody's mama tell them that?
Yeah.
I had never heard that. 7 years to pass through your system.
Well, it's a myth. I tried it.
You're still passing.
You lose most of your body heat through your head.
Truth. It is true.
I'll tell you why in a minute. Okay. Cracking your knuckles will cause arthritis later in life.
True. Myth.
Sugar makes kids hyperactive.
True.
Eating turkey makes you sleepy because
true.
It contains
no.
tryptophan.
True. Doesn't have enough tryptophan to make it.
Lightning never strikes the same place twice.
False.
And I had to throw this one in, forgive me. Homeschool children are not adequately socialized.
True.
Myth, and boy do I have statistics to back that up.
Oh, you said aren't? I thought you said are.
They were all myths. Every one of those were myths. And the interesting thing about myths is that one of the reasons they're so easy to believe and so easily to incorporate in our lives is they all had an origin. There was a reason that particular thinking started, and a lot of times their origin made perfectly good sense. I'll use the example of the losing the body heat through your head. That came from a study that these really smart scientists did with a bunch of soldiers in extremely cold climate, monitoring the amount of body heat that they were losing, and they were losing a large amount of body heat through their head. The problem with that study, they found, though, was that they were bundled up from the neck down. That was the only place the body heat could escape from. So what they later found out that was if you took a completely naked body, they only lost 10% of their body heat from their head. The other 90% was through other extremities. So that was a myth that is not true that we think, well, gosh, that's true. The other one that kind of made me chuckle was the turkey makes you sleepy because
we were
fan. I hear that every single Thanksgiving, or if we have turkey on Wednesday night dinner. Did you know that beef and chicken can contain the same amount of tryptophan as turkey, and that pork and cheese actually have more tryptophan than turkey? And so the main reason that myth continues to perpetuate itself is because of that great big meal we have once a year that is surrounded by a whole lot of other very tiring activity, and it's a huge meal that's served in the middle of the day instead of the end of the day where we're sleeping, where normally we would get really, really full because of a heavy meal. Our body gets tired because of its working extra for the digestion. We don't know we're tired because we're sleeping in the middle of the night, but Thanksgiving meal is right smack in the middle of the day, so hours later you're feeling the effects of being tired because of that heavy meal in the middle of the day. So each one of those, there was a reason, there was a logical reason in many cases why that particular thinking was adapted. Well, it's the same thing with these fences. Well, first let me give you the definition of a myth. Fiction that looks like truth. That's what a myth is. It's fiction, but it looks like truth. A myth will keep us from recognizing the truth. If it sounds true, some believe it to be true. If I see what I think I see, that must be true, and it's not always the truth. Some of the myths that we've incorporated into our lives come from our church upbringing. Some of them come from our own misunderstandings and assumptions. Some of them come from our family background, what we were taught or understood to be true in our home. I found this little story. A young woman is preparing her first Thanksgiving dinner. She gets everything ready for the big day. She sternly reminds herself to let the turkey finish thawing in the sink overnight. She puts it in the sink and places the dish rack, you know, those plastic racks she'd dry her dishes on, places the dish rack over on top of the bird. Her husband walks into the kitchen and sees this. "Why are you doing that?" he asks. "Well, my mom always did that to help the turkey thaw," she says. Well, the next day, Mom calls to see how everything is going. "Oh, fine, Mom. I have everything ready to go in the oven." And she proudly adds, "I even remembered to put the rack over the turkey last night." Well, this seemed to confuse her mother a bit. "What are you talking about?" she asks. "Well, I remembered you always put the dish rack over the turkey when it was thawing in the sink," she said. And there was a pause at the other end of the line. She says, "Well, yes, honey, but that's because we had cats." She thought she knew what was true, and that wasn't the truth at all. Sometimes we think things are true because of what we assume. Now, just to prove it isn't the females that fall into this trap, here was another little one for you. A more frightened than injured young electrician was brought into the hospital suffering from electrical burns. Shortly afterward, his instructor, the chief electrician, arrived. "Why on earth didn't you turn off the main power switch before you tried to splice the wires?" says the chief, asked the chief. "Well, I wanted to save time, chief, and I've seen you a million times stand on one leg, grab those wires, and splice without turning off the power." "My gracious, kid," the chief exclaimed. "Don't you know I have a wooden leg?" We think we know what is true, and we don't always. Myths, we think they're true. They seem to be true, but they're not always true. So let's look at a few myths. We're only going to cover the first myth this morning regarding our fences. And myth number one, if I set up a fence, I'm being selfish. You might think when I tell someone no, especially if it's someone that seems to need me, it feels selfish. It is true, we are called to love others. Ephesians 5:2 says, "Live a life filled with love for others, following the example of Christ." And if establishing fences is kind of a new thing for you, you especially are going to feel very selfish in doing those, when in fact, appropriate fences increase your ability to be able to care for other people. To clarify this, we need to understand the distinction between selfishness and stewardship, and there are very different concepts. Selfishness, here's the definition: a fixation on our own wishes and desires to the exclusion of our responsibility to others. See, God gives us wishes and desires, but we are responsible for keeping them in a healthy place with our goals, in place with our goals and responsibilities in our lives. We have to maintain our fences. We may not want what we need, and we may need what we think we don't want. But God is much more interested in meeting our needs than He is in granting our wishes. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul tells us that God gave him a thorn in his flesh. That was not something Paul wanted. In fact, three times Paul begged God, "Take it away. I don't want this." That was not Paul's wish. But God had other plans and purposes. We see later in verse 9, this was the response. Each time he, meaning God, said, "My gracious favor is all you need. My power works best in your weakness." Paul learned, okay, you know what? It's not all about me. God denied Paul's wish while completely meeting every one of Paul's needs, to the point that Paul declared himself content. We see in verse 12, he says, "Since I know it is all for Christ's good, I am quite content." And again, Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, "I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances." When we trust God with our lives and we apply appropriate wise fences, we will have everything we need. So don't fear setting up fences. God's going to meet the need. What fear is going to do, fear will rob you of enjoying what you have today and keep you in a selfish mindset. God has a plan. He has a purpose. And we need to be sure that our selfishness isn't hindering those good plans and purposes that He has for our lives. He's got a good work. And as I was looking at this, I thought, you know, selfishness really has two faces to it. We tend to only see one. We see the one where selfishness in our minds are defined, I need this, I need you to do for me this, I need you to give me this. We see that side of selfishness. But selfishness can also be where you want to do something for someone else, cross a boundary you shouldn't, you butt in where you shouldn't, because you like the way it makes you feel when you help someone. And many times that's also an act of selfishness. You're crossing into somebody else's fence line that you shouldn't belong. You're doing something you shouldn't be doing because you like the way it makes you feel when you've helped someone. You know, you've felt merciful to them, or you've done some deed that makes you feel appreciated. So you need to be very careful to establish and maintain those fences. So that's selfishness, a quick look at selfishness. Stewardship, that is the management and or care of resources for which one has no ownership. And our lives are gifts from God. And you know what that means? You don't own it. You are a steward of your life. And a lack of fences will cause you to mismanage the life that God has given you. You're going to want to do more in one area where you shouldn't be, and you're going to be doing less in another because of that. You're going to be overworking here and underworking in another. It's not just about what we want or we feel like doing. We belong to Christ. And when we say no to people and activities that are hurting us or that are harmful in some way, we are protecting God's investment. And that is such a liberating way to think about that. Instead of thinking you're being selfish, when you're establishing wise fences, you are protecting God's investment because your life belongs to Him. That healthy boundary isn't being selfish. It's good stewardship. So I can say no when I need to say no and know that I'm being a good steward with my life, with my time, with my emotions, my activities, my actions, whatever the case may be. I've been a wise steward in that area, and I can do that and know that I'm honoring God while I am. So, any questions before you go, Mary?
I just would like an example of what you should do. This is all made up right here, but the situation is say Karen and I are talking, and I'm asking her a question about how to find something, do something, and Cliff comes over and busts in and answers. And really, I want to develop more of a relationship with Karen, and I want to, you know, my boundary is between me and Karen. What should I say?
Well, I'd be curious to what other people say, but the first thing that comes to my mind, I would just gently go, excuse me, let me finish this conversation, I'll be with you in just a moment. You know,
I did that, to this day, they won't talk to me.
Well, you know, and you're not responsible for that. You know, and it may mean if you see that you've been given the cold shoulder, you can always go, I'm sorry if that hurt your feelings. You can give that empathy, but communicate that, you know, why, you know, when you haven't, you know, it would be different if you went, you know, hang on a minute, you know, if you were rude or abrupt, but when you are applying love, you're giving empathy, you know, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, I understand where that might have, but, you know, you have something to say?
No.
I'm not the expert here. Anybody else want to chime in and help answer Mary's question here? All right, well, if you've got nothing else, Karen.
I just have something to say, not about I just wanted to tell everybody thank you very much for all the prayers. And what you were talking about a minute ago, the plans that God has for us. I'm totally at peace with whatever He has for me through all this. And I am finding through all of it that the friendship and love from the church and everybody here has been awesome. And if He decides that I should only have one eye for them, I'm okay. But this is something, and I have to let you, that I can still have those days that you know me. So I'm believing right now that's what's going to happen, but if it's not planned, then I'm okay with that. But I'm just so thankful for all of you and the church for everything that you've done.
We may not always understand, but we do. you always need to trust. Thank you, Karen. All right. Well, if you've got nothing else, you are free to go. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next week.